Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Josh Mead, and he'll be answering your most important questions on the Pere Marquette River, brown, steelhead, and salmon. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Josh a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box there to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Josh Mead about the Pere Marquette River, brown, steelhead, and salmon. The Platte River Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming, features a first-class website covering all aspects of fly fishing, the tailwaters of the North Platte River, including up-to-date local fishing reports, fly patterns, guide services, and online shopping for top-of-the-line gear for any travel destination. The Platte River Fly Shop provides professional guide staff for the Blue Ribbon, Trophy, Gray Reef, and Miracle Mile sections of the North Platte River. Visit their extensive website at www.wyotrout.com. That's wyotrout.com. Or call them at 1-307-237-5997. Again, 307-237-5997. Before we introduce Josh, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a 3-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have 2 chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the section under Josh's show area there, and you'll see a link that says click here to register for our drawing. Just click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a $20 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. And that gift certificate can be redeemed either in their store or online on their website. And here's how you can win that gift certificate. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The question will be about something we talked about during the show. And you must submit the answer along with your name and location in the text box on our homepage. So listen closely and use your best typing skills and maybe you'll win that gift certificate. Tonight our guest is Josh Mead. Josh has been fishing in Michigan since he was 5 years old. His stepfather introduced him into fishing on beautiful Lake Huron in the late 70s, chasing salmon and steelhead. Thus, a fishing fanatic was created. Josh's father lived in Grayling, where Josh spent countless days on the famed Au Sable River, fishing for whatever would bite. Beginning his guiding experiences on the Big Manistee in 2005 with plugging and bottom bouncing, being the name of the game, Josh tried his luck with fly fishing in 2005. Being on lakes and ponds for bass and bluegill, Josh has rounded out his fishing and entomology experience by working and managing the fly shop at Pere Marquette River Lodge for the past 4 years. Fishing, hanging out, tying flies, and absorbing information from people like Dick Popes and longtime guide Jack Ford, Josh has been able to take his passion for fly fishing to the next level. Orvis endorsed fly fishing guides since 2008, Josh's laid-back and easygoing approach makes him a great choice for beginners and kids. This guy fishes to live and lives to fish. Well, Josh, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Hi, Roger. How you doing?
Good, good. You all set to go? We got lots of questions tonight.
I see that. Yeah, I'm ready and pumped and primed and excited.
Okay, good, good. Well, thanks again to our audience. We've got plenty of questions to work through and a lot to cover. Pere Marquette River is a big river with lots of fish in it, and so we've got plenty to talk about. So let's just dive right in. Let's talk about the river itself, and tell us, since we do have people all over the world listening, where is the Pere Marquette River? Kind of orient us there.
The Pere Marquette River is in the central west part of the state, central northwest part of the lower peninsula of Michigan. It runs through two different counties, Lake County and Mason County, and it stretches 89 miles from my location where I sit here all the way to the mouth where it flows into Lake Michigan.
Okay. And, you know, what type of river is it? Is it a kind of a spring creek?
It's a spring-fed river that has absolutely no dams on it. It's the only free-flowing river in the Midwest. And it's got just a phenomenal natural reproduction fishery. We receive absolutely no steelhead and salmon stocking whatsoever. It's 100% natural reproduction. And it's a lot of logs, old logging back in the day, stones, some large boulders, and sand, and some sediment areas with, you know, some muck, which produces our hex hatch and some of our bugs. But mostly gravelly areas, logs, and the sand comprises the river.
Okay, so not a lot of cobblestones on the bottom kind of thing.
Not really.
Yeah.
It's mostly a little bit larger stones, but it's got really good gravel area. Obviously, if we're, you know, 100% natural reproduction on the migrating salmon and steelhead.
Yeah, they like it, huh? So, yeah.
They sure do.
Now, what kind of depth is the river average?
Well, it depends on the time of the year. Like right now, we have extremely low clear water conditions. We've been dry for several weeks. And so the holes, and they can range anywhere from 2 feet deep to, I'd say, 15, 16 feet deep right now. Under high water conditions or higher normal water conditions, obviously it'll be another 2-3 feet deeper. It just ranges and fluctuates with the rainfall. That's how our river fluctuates. It's all dependent on rainfall.
Yeah, since you don't have a dam controlling the output.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's nice that you don't have a dam, but it's also can be a problem in low water years, I suppose.
Absolutely, it can be. Gotten recent reports that, you know, the Manistee, which has a dam on it, is fishing fairly well for salmon, where our fishery is a little slower right now because we're just dry.
Yeah, waiting. Now, is the Paramaquette, and I guess locals refer to it as a PM, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So I'll probably do that from now on, save a few words.
Okay.
Is the PM a year-round fishery?
Absolutely.
Oh, good.
We fish for browns, rainbows, and steelhead year-round in this stream. And steelhead, not so much in the summer. We do get a little bit of a Skamania run, but not a huge one. But overall, about once every 10 years, it'll freeze over solid for a couple weeks in February where you can't really get on it. But that hasn't happened since I've been working here in 4 years.
So now, and there is no season in Michigan?
Well, there's
a drought, or
as far as open and close season.
Yeah, as far as license goes, yeah.
Yes, I mean, for people that want to keep them, and then there's the smaller tributaries, they close on September 30th and don't reopen until the last Saturday in April. So between the last Saturday in April and September 30th, they're open, all the inland streams and smaller tributaries are open all summer long, spring, summer, and fall, and then close. But the Paramaquette, from M37 Bridge, right where we're located, all the way down to Ludington, is open all year round to fishing.
Okay.
You just can't keep the trout during the closed Michigan season, which is September 30th, April, last Saturday in April.
Okay, everybody get your pens and paper ready here. I'm going to give you a URL where you can go and see, again, a map of the area that we will be talking about, and I'm sure Josh will refer to it. So here's the website address. It's www.trailstotrout.com. TrailsToTrout.com. TrailsToTrout.com/PM, like Paramaquette, PM underscore info 1457.html. So it's www.trailstotrout.com/PM_info1457.html. So that'll show you a nice little map of the area that Josh just referred to. And one thing it does seem to show on this map is marked in gray are the public access. And that was something I wanted to ask you about public access. And is there a lot for waders or boats, and how does that work?
Well, there's, as far as foot travel, it is pretty limited, but there is a lot of foot access, you know, in certain sections of the river. And there's a lot of private clubs on the river, a lot of private residences that some people back in the 70s bought hundreds and hundreds of acres on this river, and now everything is grandfathered in. There are no more building of homes of any sort on this river. And there is quite a bit of foot access. It just seems like there isn't. You know, under high water conditions, it can be tough if somebody comes up and doesn't know the river. And when you can't see the bottom, it can be very dangerous.
Now, is it, so would you say it's better suited to floating than wading?
For access, absolutely.
And what about fishing? Do you fish mainly from a boat, or are you getting out and wading, using the boat more for transportation?
Using the boat mainly for transportation to get from spot to spot where foot access can't get to. And you know, it allows for you to, depending on the water conditions also, in normal or shallow water conditions, you know, you can get most people out of the boat and they can see the bottom and see the fish and interact that way. But floating it by boat is definitely, you've got a lot more access and a lot better opportunity, I believe. You can get into areas where people haven't been relentlessly pounding it
right,
for days and days and days on end.
Now, what are the laws in the state of Michigan as far as, you know, what you can access from the boat? You know, like in Montana, you can get out of the boat but only go to the high water mark. And in mm-hmm. New Mexico, you can't even get out of the boat. You know, Wyoming, you can't get out of the boat on private lands is what I'm talking about.
Right. It's the same thing as in Montana. You can go up to the highest water mark of the river. You can get out of the boat and fish in any private area if it's private land on both sides. You know, if you're in the water wading, you know, under low water conditions, you can wade quite a ways in some of these areas, like in the fly water, which is the most common area on this river. You can wade quite a ways. By law, you come up to an obstruction where it's going to go over your head. You can get out onto private property, go around the obstruction, but you must immediately get back into the river and not trounce up and down somebody's property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But by boat, nobody has to worry about being in the water. Sometimes, you know, some of the guys need to relieve themselves and they go up on private property. Don't usually have a problem with most of the people, but some of them get kind of touchy about that. But that would be the only laws.
Now, are we talking, what kind of boats are we talking? Are we talking drift boats on this river, or do you need a powered
yes.
boat?
No, Mackenzie-style drift boats or wooden drift boats. A lot of people build their own.
And what about shuttle services? Tom Putin in Mount Juliet, Tennessee, wants to know, if he brings his own boat, are there some shuttle services in the area?
Absolutely. Come right here to the fly shop and we'll sign you up.
Okay. Paramarket River Lodge.
We've got our own shuttle service. And
okay. Good, good.
We'll take care of you.
Dave in Ludington, Michigan asks, where do you prefer to fish, upstream or downstream of Gleason's Landing? And do you have different fishing strategies for each of those areas?
It really depends on the time of the year. During the salmon season, I do like the fly water because it's the top 8.9 miles of gravel area in the entire river.
And when you say fly water, what orient us that on that map?
M37, from M37 bridge to Gleason's Landing.
Okay, that's the fly water.
Yes, it's the flies only catch and release, and it's approximately 8.5 miles of river. And it has tons and tons and tons of gravel in it. And that's where most of these fish, the migrating fish, come up and spawn. In the summertime, you know, I tend to do a lot of nighttime fishing, mousing for browns. And I like to go, you know, downstream in the Rainbow Rapids area or Sioux Lac. You know, those are areas that really people don't explore a whole lot because it's deeper water. There are some pretty decent fish down there, really good decent fish. Bowman's Bridge area, that's a really good area. It's kind of slow water and holds some nice trout in there that people don't really fish a whole lot during the nighttime hours.
Okay.
So those, okay. I tend to pound it quite a bit because it's right in my backyard here at the lodge.
Right.
So I get out of work, suit up, and boom, down at the river I go.
Okay. Kevin in Plainfield, Illinois asks, "Is the Paramarket is a small and big river that has taken me swimming more than a few times. Do you have any advice on crossing it around Rainbow Rapids when the water is high?"
Well, Rainbow Rapids is the fastest area in the river.
It is.
That's why it's called Rainbow Rapids. It's the quickest part of the river. So crossing around that area in high water conditions, I wouldn't do it, to be honest with you. The only thing I can really tell him is when he's going across the river, instead of his back perpendicular to the current, needs to slide his body as less resistance as possible. So, you know, he's standing parallel to the current. So it's going across, you know, his thigh, one thigh, and trying not to get above his waist.
Yeah.
The further you go above your waist, the more body weight that is pushing against you and pushing your feet from underneath you.
Yeah. And if probably most of us have had that floating sensation, I should
say. Oh, yes. Yeah.
And help you stay upright.
Yeah, I have gone bobbing down the river myself. Following some of my friends.
Yeah, not a pleasant experience.
No, I've not.
Yeah, okay, so we've got a question from John in Illinois, and he says, what effect have you observed from the boats coming down constantly? How do you work around that? Is that a problem?
Well, if he means by boats, if he's talking drift boats during the fall season, it's really something you're not going to be able to avoid. You know, once the peak season's in full swing, it's going to be constant for weeks on end when that's, you just kind of, you know, just take your time, work the area really thoroughly. You know, don't get frustrated and just keep pounding those fish. If he's talking the canoes and the kayakers during the summertime, the best way to avoid those is to fish early in the morning. And by early in the morning, I mean 5 a.m. to 10, 11 o'clock. And then fish late in the evening from 5 p.m. till dark. And the reason behind that is by law, all canoers, kayakers, and nobody that's fishing has to be off the water by 6 p.m. And they cannot launch any canoes until 9 a.m.
So, well, that's kind of nice. I mean, a lot of
it is. It's
don't
very
have
nice.
That kind of regulation.
No, a lot of rivers don't. That's the beauty of the Wild and Scenic River Act, is that's where that regulation has come from.
Because, of course, out here where I am, in the Rockies in the West, you've got a lot of kayaking and especially rafting, you know, on many of these rivers that, you know, can be troublesome.
Yeah, it tends to put, during the day, when they just start coming down, those canoers are banging around, they're hooting and hollering, it really tends to put the fish off. They just kind of sit on the bottom, and if you can get something right on the bottom and put it in front of their face, sure, there's always that chance that they're going to take it. But,
yeah.
You know, floating a canoe over a trout's head is like flying a B-52 over ours.
Right.
You know, it's not a fun thing.
Yeah. Well, Josh, we need to take a quick break here, but when we come back,
okay. We'll
talk more about the Pere Marquette River. Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. They have an extensive inventory and fly tying department and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.keeney.com. That's K-I-E-N-E.com, Keeney.com. Or call Keeney's Fly Shop at 1-800-400-400. 0359. That's 1-800-400-0359. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Josh Mead about Pere Marquette River, brown steelhead salmon. If you'd like to ask Josh a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, Josh, we briefly mentioned your lodge there. Tell us what you're doing in the fly fishing world and a bit about your business up there.
Well, we're the only platinum level Orvis dealership in the entire state of Michigan. We have a 10-bedroom lodge, 5 rustic cabins and 2 riverfront houses, a full-service fly shop, and guide service. We run year-round. We do all kinds of activities, corporate retreats. Family reunions are very popular in the summertime, because we have such a large facility that accommodates pretty large groups of families. Business, corporate retreats, we have a dining hall in the lodge, and in the 10 rooms, a lot of businesses come up here, do their meetings in the lodge, and kind of relax by the fireplace in the lobby or take some trips with our guides. And we do this year-round. We try not to stop, and business, you know, trucks on, it slows down in the winter, but then the snowmobilers like to take over in the wintertime and come up here, and you have screaming snowmobilers, and keeps us business going in the wintertime. A few hardcore steelheaders, you know, we've got a lot of familiar faces that come up here during that time, and it's just a really, really good place to come and relax and sit by the fire at night, have a beer or two or water or whatever you want to drink, and talk about your day's fishing or just kind of look up at the stars.
Is this your lodge, an old lodge or new lodge?
The Pure Marquette River Lodge has been in business for 25 years. We celebrated our 25th year this year as a
member. Oh, great. Congratulations. And website address for your...
Our website is www.pmlodge.com.
Okay, www.pmlodge.com.
Yes.
Good. So folks can reach you there, phone numbers, everything on the website.
Correct. That phone number, there's a way to log on and send us an email with any questions that you have about lodging, guide service, you know, when the fish are expected to arrive.
Okay, great.
Any questions they have, they can either call us or email.
Okay, we've got a couple questions online here. Let me just kind of glance at them. Rod from Amarillo, Texas asks, what's the longest float on the PM? Can you get that you can get a shuttle for 4 mile, 8 mile, longer?
The longest float would be upper to Wahala. All the guides refer to it as upper to Whoopass because it's about 11.5 mile float. And by itself, it's a four-hour row. But it's a really good section during the salmon season.
And where does that go from? Where's the put-in and where's the take-out?
Upper Branch Bridge to Wahala.
Okay, I don't see either of those on... Oh, I see Upper Branch Bridge, yeah.
Yeah, Upper Branch.
And then Wahala. Okay, Wahala Bridge. Okay, yeah.
13 to 18.
Okay.
It's one of the longest floats in the area. I mean, you can make them even longer depending on where you go. The shuttle service will shuttle your vehicle anywhere you would like to go.
Right, right. It's just how much fishing can you get done.
Exactly.
You know, if you're getting out of the boat.
If you're talking fishing, then, yeah, you definitely got to figure those in. Here at the shop, we have some maps provided by the federal government that have float times from each access to another access.
Yeah.
So you can kind of gauge that.
Okay. Larry Hull, Indian River, Michigan, he's asking about getting overrun by drift boat anglers and other boats. He seems as a wading angler, it's a hard time finding solitary water without a drift boat. Is he doomed to battle the crowds? And I guess you kind of addressed that a few minutes ago.
Yeah, if he's talking, you know, during the salmon season, which is approaching, in another couple weeks, we'll be rocking steady. We'll be packed out, and people will be coming from all over the world to fish for these salmon. And the fly water, by far, is the most popular. And like I said, the access, the federal access, is pretty limited. Most people, you know, that I've come across guiding down the river the last couple of years have been pretty courteous. But if he's looking for some place to go, you know, for solitude, and if it's before September 30th, he can go above M37 Bridge. There will be salmon up there. These fish will migrate as far as they possibly can go. They can go another 30, 35 miles upstream and do their spawning. There's areas there. Also, the Big South Branch, which is downstream by almost a Custer. There's a little tributary that flows into the PM, and there is some access on that river there where the salmon and steelhead actually migrate up into there. And not very many people fish those areas.
Well, that was my next question on tributaries. There are several tributaries that feed in that I guess are also well-known for fishing in their own right.
Mm-hmm.
What are those tributaries, and what are they known for? Why would you go there to fish? You just mentioned one to get a little solitude.
The solitude. The Baldwin River is pretty popular for the brook trout fishing. The Pure Marquette doesn't have a huge population of brook trout. The brown trout are so aggressive and they munch away on those tasty morsels. They just don't survive in the PM. But going up the Baldwin, you've got both Rainbows and Brookies in there, and then further downstream you get closer to the PM, you also have Browns mixed in there too. The Big South Branch is another one, and some people like that small stream aspect. They don't like the big rivers. They like kind of just walking into tight conditions and making those real tight roll cast or bow and arrow cast. And those are the two main ones on the PM. You can go upstream to where the Little Branch and the Middle Branch come into the Pierre Marquette River, and there's some access to those rivers, but it's pretty limited up there too because of the private property. But it's just mainly the solitude, getting away from the main groups that come into the most popular areas, the fly section. And
but it's probably going to be fishing in the tributaries rather than any salmon or steelhead.
No, there will be salmon in those tributaries. They will migrate up the Baldwin, up the Little and the Middle Branch. You know, you always have a chance. It's just a tendency after September 30th, you can't fish in those areas. They're closed.
Right. So it depends on when the run starts, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's typically when the run's really peaked, or it's in the peak of it, is right around that time.
Okay.
And so you're forced to go into the main branch of the PM where everybody else has to go to. So it just depends on his timing.
Okay.
It's all a matter of timing.
One final kind of question on the river. Barry in Detroit asks about, says, what's your perspective on the weir closing down? I guess there's a weir on the river?
Yeah, there's an electrical barrier that the federal government put on there 20 years ago to keep the lamprey from migrating up the river to spawn. And in 20 years, it's never worked. They have always had to put lampreycide in the river to kill the lamprey larvae. So it was a waste of time and money. And the only thing that we really proved as fishermen and everybody else that it did was it would stop the migration of our steelhead. They would be coming up and they'd turn that weir on. Well, it would just stop them cold right there. They would sit there for days and days and days waiting for some water, waiting for some rain to migrate up the river. So instead of having a consistent March, I'm just throwing this out there, March 10th to April 10th, a four-week period where you could count on fish just keep coming in, you have a couple weeks where the fishing be good, and then all of a sudden 2 weeks you couldn't find a fish other than below the weir. And I think it's going to be a great thing, and that we're not going to see it for another year or two because of the most of the fish that were stopped at the weir, some of them spawned down there.
So where is the weir at?
Weir's at Custer.
Oh, way down river.
Yeah, way down river. And I think it's going to be a good thing. You know,
they're going to rip it out? Is that what they're going to do?
I haven't gotten any information on that as far as what they're going to do with it. They're just going to let it sit there and rot. I've talked to some people, and I really believe they should rip it out of there and put it down in the Chicago locks.
They've
proved that it stops the migration of the fish. So
yeah.
We've got an invader coming in. So
we've talked about some of the different fish there, but I'll kind of formally ask the question, what types of sport fish are most sought after in the PM?
It would be the steelhead in the spring, salmon in the fall, and then brown trout and rainbows year-round.
Okay.
That would be, number one would be steelhead. Steelhead are the prized possession. They're very finicky. They can be very tough to catch. And when they're fresh, they are extremely, extremely tough. They're like rockets. And they fight and jump all over the place. And they give you a run for your money. And in this river, you have maybe 50, 60 yards before you're getting into a log jam. That fish is going to take you right to that log jam. So steelhead is definitely probably the number one fly fishing species sought after in this river.
Okay. And are any of these native to the Pierre Marquette River?
No. None of these, the brown trout nor the salmon or the steelhead, are native. The brown trout were planted in the river back in 1894, and then shortly after, the McLeod strain from out west, the McLeod strain of the steelhead was planted in the river, and they just took off. And then back in the 70s, the salmon showed up. So none of these fish, other than I think there's a couple brook trout in the river, are native to these waters.
Okay. and the Rainbow are not either, then?
No.
Okay. Now, are any of those stocked nowadays, or are they all...
We do get very limited stocks of brown trout and rainbows. And by limited, I'm talking 2,000 to 3,000 fingerlings.
Oh, that's it? So it's pretty self-sustaining, then.
Yes, it is.
Fishery.
Yeah, that's why we preach and practice catch and release, is because of that aspect. It's 100% natural reproduction, basically,
okay,
in our eyes.
Larry in Garden City asked, what's the best time of year to fish northern Michigan, which I guess he's referring to Pierre Marquette. And we also had another question on what are the seasons. And I think then we have Dave in Ludington, Michigan, asking, what is your favorite season to fish the PM? So can you kind of run those seasons by us again on
when
you come for what?
Well, let's start with right now. We've got the salmon starting to come in the fall time, and they're coming up their four-year cycle. They've run their course, and now it's time to spawn, procreate, and die. Once they start coming in the river, the resident trout, rainbows and browns, start getting pretty giddy with eggs flowing down the river, so they're gorging on the eggs to pack on the pounds. Once the salmon start dying off, you get into October, the fall run, the steelhead start coming up. And they've got one thing on their mind, and that's the feed. They're going to be packing on the pounds to sustain themselves throughout the brutal winter months, to stay in the river all winter long. And the browns are going to get ready to spawn also. Once the browns spawn and the steelhead have all migrated up, you're getting into December, January, February. And those are typically the toughest months. Those are for the hardcore steelheaders and trout fishermen. The winters can get pretty brutal up here. Last year was very mild by all aspects, but you're fishing for the steelhead and the browns and the rainbows in the wintertime. Spring arrives in March, April, and into May is when the steelhead migrate to do their spawning ritual. And the first ones to spawn will be those steelhead that have been in the river all winter long. And once the water temperatures start tickling about 38 to 40 degrees, they're going to get on the beds and spawn, and then they're going to get back out into the lake and start feeding again on those alewives and smelt out there. And then after the spring, we start going into our prolific bug hatches. Around the end of May, June, we have Hendricksons, gray drakes, sulfurs, stoneflies, a lot of our dry fly action happens. End of June and July is our hex season, which is all night fishing, the giant mayfly, and very popular time when people pack the river. It's a great time to catch a giant brown trout, and a rainbow trout is on the Hexagena mayfly. And then throughout the summer, you get some hopper activity going, and then the ever-growing popular nighttime mousing is a really, really good way to get a giant brown also.
Okay. So if you're hardcore enough, you truly can fish all season long, all year long, I should say. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk. Rod had a follow-up question. He wants to know how much you charge for your shuttles.
For my what?
For your shuttle service.
Oh, $25 anywhere on the river.
Anywhere on the river, okay.
Yes, sir.
There you go, Rod. Let's talk about the brown trout. So we'll kind of go into each one of these species, brown, steelhead, and salmon, so we can get a little bit more detail about those. But first we'll take a quick break, then we'll come back and dig in and start talking about browns. Have you ever dreamed about the classic actions of bamboo fly rods? Did you know that it's possible for you to make your own bamboo fly rods? With the help of Power Fibers online magazine, you can do just that. Power Fibers is a magazine dedicated to making bamboo fly rods and telling the stories about bamboo through the ages. From rod making techniques to stories about fishing bamboo rods to rod maker profiles to classic papers, Power Fibers has it all. Visit our website at www.powerfibers.com. That's www.powerfibers.com. We're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Josh Mead about Pierre Marquette River, brown, steelhead, and salmon. If you'd like to ask Josh a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, Josh, let's talk about brown trout. nice picture of you with a brown, I think, on our website, in fact. Jerry in Arizona wants to know, if you're coming up there after browns, what do you recommend for rod, reel, and line weight of the PM?
Well, a lot's going to depend what time of the day you're fishing. During the day, and then it also depends on the technique. If you're dry fly fishing or nymphing, then you're going to use anything from 4-weight to a 6-weight as a really good brown trout or even a rainbow trout rod for that aspect, dry fly or nymphing. If you're going to be streamer fishing, a 9-foot 8-weight with a 300-grain sink tip is very popular around here. It's got the backbone to cast that heavy fly, and then to, with the weighted fly line, it sinks down there. And typically with streamers, it's a really good way to get a, you know, brown trout in anywhere from 20 to 26 inches, and you want to have the backbone to bring that beast in. At nighttime, you also want to use a stout rod then because you're casting a heavy mouse fly, so a 6-weight or a 7-weight. Some people use an 8-weight. It might be a little bit too much, but a 6 or a 7-weight is a really good mousing rod. It's got the backbone to cast that fly, and when that giant strikes that mouse at night, you've got the backbone to yank him out of that log jam before he gets you wrapped up and broke off. So it's kind of, yeah. I hope I covered everything for him as far as, you know, just what time of year or what conditions he's fishing. I mean, if he's looking for one rod to bring up, I would say a 6-weight. Okay. Actually, you know, a 9-foot 6-weight would be a really good one rod outfit to fish all those conditions.
Okay. 9-foot 6-weight. Okay. Mm-hmm. Randy in West Tennessee asks about what's a good type of sinking fly line. I think you just mentioned one, but do you want to talk about the sinking fly lines or sinking tips or what?
Yeah, we can. It really depends on the river, the size of the river, the size of the holes. You know, the Pier Marquette is a little bit smaller river system than, say, the Manistee or the Muskegon. So here, anywhere from 200 to a 300-grain sink tip is definitely sufficient. It'll get that fly down there quick enough and deep enough in the strike zone for that fish to grab it. And if you're fishing the Manistee or the upper stretches of the Manistee where their holes are 20, 25 feet deep, you're going to want about a 600-grain sink tip or even a full sinking line to get that fly down there much, much quicker. So it's all relative to where you're fishing and what type of stream conditions you have, but really a good general, like I said, I mean, a 9-foot 8-weight rod with a 300-grain sink tip has been very good to me and everybody else that I've put it in their hands. It casts really well, handles the big flies, and it gets it down there deep.
Alan in Franklin, Pennsylvania asks about, do you prefer using a strike indicator when you're nymphing?
I do not, personally. I have tried it a couple of different ways, and I kind of like just not using it. Using a couple of beadhead nymphs, maybe a shot up above it, a little bit of a shot. But I've caught several trout this spring just using 2 beadhead nymphs and a long, like a 9 or 10 foot leader, and caught several fish doing it that way.
Okay.
Some people just, you know, you can swing them 2 beadhead nymphs, you can just swing it across there, and it's actually a natural presentation of those bugs coming up off the bottom and going to the surface. And it was really good for me this spring. I know a lot of people like the strike indicator because it's visual. It's all visual. But me personally, I'd rather not use them.
Well, I know a lot of guides like to put their customers on
mm-hmm.
a strike indicator because it makes it easier for them.
Yep, absolutely. For some clients, it definitely makes it a lot easier. And that's, you know, you just talk to everybody. It's all personal preference, really. You know, some people like the feel, some people like the visual.
Yeah.
It just all depends on what you like.
Yeah. Donald French in Indianapolis asked, I've fished the PM for many years for steelhead. He's talking about steelhead here. We'll skip that. We'll come back to that one. Craig, Palo Alto, California. Do brown trout really require a different approach style than a rainbow or brook trout? Here in California, I keep hearing that brown trout are easily spooked. However, I haven't noticed a big difference in spooking between wild trout. So is there a different approach for browns?
No, not really. I mean, the biggest thing I've noticed as far as brown trout is they are nocturnal by nature. They are a night feeder, so they're a little more light sensitive than a rainbow trout. So during sunny conditions, the brown trout are more likely to be tucked under the wood or undercut banks, just kind of laying in there, hiding out. And on those days, I've noticed I catch more rainbow trout than I do browns. And I think it has a lot to do with the light conditions. So under them low light conditions, cloud cover, rain, the brown trout are more apt to come out because they're not as it's not as sensitive to their eyes.
What's the count comparison between rainbows and browns?
I haven't seen any of the latest reports. I think the rainbow trout were superseding the browns only by a couple hundred per mile.
Almost 50.
Yeah, it's pretty darn close to the same. But like I said, this was a report that was back in 2006,
okay.
And I haven't seen anything recent.
Okay, another question by John in Leawood, Kansas. He says, I was recently watching a fishing show on Pere Marquette, and a guide on the river was naming spots where big browns lived. The browns on the river hang around year-round in certain holes?
Absolutely. Yeah,
they have addresses there on the
yes,
DM?
We have. That's what we call them. We have addresses on several of these trout, and we'll be rowing down the river and kind of point out in some areas where there's already people standing. We'll say there's a nice 26 incher that lays in there, or 20 incher here, 18 incher there. And most of the reason we know this is because we've either caught them, or our clients have caught them, or we've seen. Or been with somebody that has caught them. So you remember those spots. And there is one that I know particular because I caught it a couple years ago. It's called the Shockton snake, or we call her Henrietta. 26 and a half inch brown. And you can tell the markings. The markings are the same. It's like a fingerprint for humans on the browns. The markings are all different. And, you can just tell. Especially when you have photographic evidence and
yeah.
You set them up side to side, that's the same fish.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they definitely reside in the same area until they either just die naturally or get accidentally killed by whatever reason, mishandling or a hook down the gills.
Yeah. Now, the browns, when they go into their spawning routine, do they move then? Do they move upriver?
Well, they'll move up a little bit to the spawning gravel. Like I said, there's spawning gravel all over in the flywater, so they don't have to go very far.
Okay, so they don't make big trips or anything. They really
No.
kind of stay resident in the same area.
Correct.
Year-round.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. John also had a second part of his question. He said, what are your top flies for the tea-colored water?
With tea-colored water, depending on the temperature of the water, if it's, for browns and cold water, your stonefly nymphs, black and brown, work really, really well. Bright colored eggs, orange, chartreuse. If you're talking water temperatures over 50 degrees, then I would be throwing streamers for sure. Starting out with a white, going to black, natural colors like a gray or a brown, that type of a thing, and tea-colored water. That's really conducive with streamer fishing, and it produces some of the bigger trout.
Let's talk about something you're famous for up there, which is the hexagenas.
Okay.
And is that typically night fishing for browns, right?
Correct.
Is that
it's
cracked
all night
up?
Fishing.
Is that all it's cracked up to be?
It is. It's a very, very productive way to catch a big brown trout and or rainbow trout.
Tell us a little bit about how you approach that. What's your strategy? What you do?
Well, you got to pick the right type of water, and most of the hexagena water, the hex hatch, happens below Upper Branch Bridge down to right around Indian. And above Indian is what's called the swamp. It's a lot of mucky water where the hexagenas hatch and reside, and then they fly upstream to deposit their eggs. So anywhere, from upper, like I said, actually from lower branch is actually better. Lower branch to Indian is pretty much the most popular hex water.
How big are these? These are mayflies, right?
Oh, yeah, they're mayflies that range anywhere from the first initial hatches of hexagena, the hexagena lobatas. They are 2.5 inches long. They're giants. Big, cream-colored cream and yellow colored flies.
And are you just fishing primarily dry fly fishing for?
Well, some, yes. Primarily it's a spinner or a dun stage. There's a lot of, you can run tandem rigs while fishing, so you run a dun and then a spinner behind it, which will give you both options. I mean, give the fish the option. If they keep taking that spinner stage, then you know what they're feeding on, or if it's the dun.
Sounds like an exciting evening.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. You'll be sitting on the water. I've been sitting there in a spot where I know the hex hatch. It's one of the most unpredictable hatches. You just really never know if it's going to happen or not. I mean, usually on the hot, humid, muggy days is when it happens, but I've been out there and it hasn't. But when it does, I'll tell you what, these trout come from unbelievable places, and there's so many of them. When they're feeding on these flies, every single trout is out feeding on them. It is absolutely amazing.
It's gorging.
Yes, absolutely. They're feeding frenzy.
What's your time of year that this might happen?
The last 2 weeks of June, first week of July.
Okay. Give or take a week, huh?
Well, give or take. And again, it's all weather dependent. The hotter, the better. The muggier, which is not real comfortable conditions, but tends to be the mosquito season, too.
Oh, wonderful.
But the last 2 weeks of June, first week of July, is the Hexagena libata. Then we get a smaller hatch of the Rica Verda, which is a smaller version of the hex, which lasts about a week or two. Usually after 4th of July is when that one starts.
Okay. I thought it was always mosquito season up there in Michigan.
It seems like it, but I'll tell you what, it hasn't been that bad this year.
No, okay.
I stood out on the river last night with a couple of clients. I had no bug juice on, nothing. I didn't get bit once.
Oh, good.
And it was really hot and humid last night. I was surprised.
Well, let's talk about another strategy and technique that you'd mentioned before that sounds exciting. Again, I guess, a nighttime activity, and that's, you had talked about mousing for browns.
Mousing.
Yeah, so tell us about mousing, what's involved there. And also with the hexes and the mousing, are we talking about fishing when it's pitch dark, or are we just talking about dusk?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
What kind of equipment do you need? And you have headlamps, what do you got out there?
You definitely have a headlamp with you, because you're going to need some light to retie if you break off or you get tangled up. Or, you know, sometimes what I do with the headlamp is I'll get into an area and I'll click it on really quick and scan the area just to see where the log jams are, overhanging trees, so I can try and avoid losing as many flies as possible. Your, you know, waders, your 6-weight, 7-weight rod, 15 to 20 pound straight mono, and some nippers and mouse flies. That's really about all you need.
You travel
pretty light when you're mouse fishing.
And are you just working the banks from the banks out?
The best thing to do
top
is
water?
Yeah, is soft water is really good, or right behind log jams. What happens is these field mice come out and feed on the grass stalks along the riverbank, and they're scurrying around on the bank, and they'll fall in the water or coming across log jams, and they'll slip. Fishing those log jams right behind the log jams is a really, really good option. Those brown trout will be just lurking in there waiting for that splat and that mouse to start scurrying across the water to present itself as a meal. It's one of my favorite times to fish. And I get a lot more time to fish at night than I do during the winter season because of the shortness of the days, but I've really, really gotten hooked on the mouse fishing.
Now, is that, if you're looking for a trophy brown trout, is mouse fishing one of the best ways to go for one? Or?
Yes, it is. It's one of the most productive, but it's also the longest time frame. It usually starts, this year it started around mid-May because we had a warm spring this year, and I'm still fishing mice to this day. As a matter of fact, I might be going out tonight after I get done with this.
Okay.
You got
good.
Me talked into it.
Yeah, good. Well, we need to take a quick break again, and when we come back, let's talk about steelhead.
Sounds good.
Women's fly fishing in Alaska is owned and operated by well-known female guide Pudge Kleinkopf. Women's fly fishing offers several lodge-based fly fishing schools for women, as well as an array of small group guided trips for women to couples to some of Alaska's best-known waters for salmon, rainbow trout, Arctic grayling, and char. Fudge also leads saltwater fly fishing groups to Mexico each spring. Beginners are welcome and equipment is provided. Learn more about fly fishing for women at www.womensflyfishing.net. That's www.womensflyfishing.net. Or call Pudge directly at 907-274-7113. That's 907-274-7113. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Josh Mead about the Pere Marquette River brown steelhead salmon. If you'd like to ask Josh a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com. Use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll get your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Let's see. Let me just look real quick before we get into the steelhead. Oh, Eric in Lebanon, Pennsylvania wants to know, is there any particular mouse pattern, and what size do you make your mice?
Well, I tie a lot of my own mice. We sell, the shot flies that we sell produce really, really well. And they're typically black in color or brown on a size anywhere from a size 2 to a size 10 hook would be the smallest I would go, depending on how you tie it. Some people use deer hair. I do not, because with deer hair, you just got to stack it. It takes a lot of time to tie a deer hair mouse. I use a real simple rabbit strip and foam and some rubber legs and tie a real simple pattern that's produced really well for me in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. So really the typical size and hook is like a size 10 all the way up to you can use a size 1/0 bass hook, which I have found that has worked really well for me, a straight shanked bass hook, oddly enough. But yeah, about anywhere from a 2/0 all the way to a 10 is a good sized mouse.
Another question off the internet, Larry Hull, Indian River, Michigan, wants to know about streamers. What are some of the top streamers for brown trout?
Zoo cougars are really good. Again, I tie quite a few of my own streamers. I tie the bigger stuff because it seems to be easier. There's a couple out there, listen, the nutcracker or of a self. Something with deer hair and a rabbit strip or something.
You mentioned a zoo cougar, the Kelly Gallop fly.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's a really good fly, typically in a white, like I said, white, a black, an olive, or even a gray, a natural gray. I found that what's called the Shinaboo Shiner by Umpqua has been a really good early spring fly. And we've gotten steelhead on them, but brown trout really like those in the spring.
Follow-up question on the mousing here. Tom from Carmel wants to know, do you guide in the evening and do mousing?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. I was out there last night with a couple.
Great, great.
Yeah, they had a wonderful time and got scared several times. They weren't quite sure what they were getting into, but they had a wonderful time. It was a great experience for them, and I loved having them. Yeah, we do nice fish. They didn't land any. They definitely rolled some, and they didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
Type of thing. And, you know, you're standing there in the middle of the dark, and I heard the gentleman down there talking about the beauty of the night because the stars were out. It was very bright, and all of a sudden, gabloosh.
Yeah.
The fish struck his mouse. And they tend to miss it quite a bit at night, but it's a great chance to catch a giant.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about steelhead. You said one question was how far they run up the river. I think you said
they go all the way up past us, past the bridge, another 30, 40 miles.
Okay.
Typically, they'll go back to where they were born or where they were hatched.
Okay.
So, I mean, anywhere in the entire river system, there's spawning gravel even down by Wahala and Custer and stuff. The fish do spawn down there.
Where is the best place to fish for them?
I'd have to say it's in the flywater.
That's a hot place, that flywater.
Yeah, it is. It's protected. It's, you know, like I said, it's got the best spawning gravel pretty much in the entire river. It's got a ton of it in the entire stretch.
So a lot of them seem to stop there, kind of like, hey, it's not going to get any better than this, so we might as well do it here.
Huh? Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And then Mike from Florida, again, wants to know, you know, he's coming from out of state. What's his best time of year for him to hopefully catch a steelhead on the fly?
I would say the last 2 weeks of March, first 2 weeks in April. A lot of people say right around Easter time is the best time to catch a steelhead on the fly. Getting those water temperatures, you know, between 38 and 42 degrees gets them really active. They tend to get on the gravel. They start tickling the gravel, but they're also feeding fish while they're on the gravel versus a salmon that doesn't feed at all when it's in the river. Steelhead will bite a fly when they're on the gravel. They're less likely to on the gravel, but they will do it. But the best time on a fly for a steelhead, in my opinion, would be the last couple weeks of March,
okay.
First 2 weeks in April.
And Mike, coming from Florida, should probably still bring his long johns along, right?
Absolutely. It has snowed in May up here.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You never know. It's Michigan.
Shane in Grand Prairie, Texas, asked the same question, but there's a second part to his. He says, would this be a good time of year for a first-timer to come fish for steelhead?
Yes. Springtime would be the best time because in the spring you have quantity more than you have quality. The springtime brings up all the steelhead that are ready to spawn out of the lake and brings them into the river. So you have more fish in the river system. Say in the spring you'll get 8,000, whereas in the fall you'll get maybe 2,000, maybe 3,000. So it's a much better opportunity to hook a steelhead in the spring than it is in the fall.
And then what, again, is the rod and reel lightweight combination that you'd suggest for the steelhead?
The most common and one of the one that I see the most of is a 10-foot 7-weight with a good reel with a great drag on it and something that's going to sustain the cold water, something that's not going to freeze up instantly or has a sealed drag. The best thing would be a sealed drag system on your reel.
What kind of backing do you have?
20-pound Dacron or even 30-pound, depending on how big your arbor is on your reel. If you're going to require a lot of backing to take up most of that space on your arbor, then you would want the 30-pound Dacron. If you've got a smaller arbor, 20-pound. 20-pound is plenty. A Dacron is some pretty strong stuff. Tie a lot of flies with it. As far as articulated flies, it holds up really well to the abuse.
Okay, and we've got Sonny in Wilmington, North Carolina, asked about what's your favorite steelhead fly, your go-to fly?
Actually, my go-to steelhead fly is the ultimate common prince nymph. The prince nymph here works exceptionally well. I don't know if it's just me, and it's a confidence fly for me. Just I catch a lot of fish on that fly. And there's other ones, stoneflies in the spring. You know, we get the stoneflies are hatching. There's a lot of black and brown stones floating around the river. And also the hex nymph. The hex nymph hatches in the spring also. So those are pretty much your top three flies that I would, you know, besides eggs. You know, egg fly is very, very popular also.
So this is a bit different. I guess on the West Coast, you know, you're talking Oregon and so forth. A lot of Northern California, a lot of the steelhead there are caught on, you know, streamers or attractor flies.
Right.
They aren't really feeding. So is that a big difference here, is that they're actually feeding in the PM?
Yes. Yeah, they actually do feed in this river. They're, like I said, depending on where they're at in their stage, if they're up on the gravel, they're less likely to feed, but you can get them to strike. But if they're in the holes and the pockets and the seams, they're always feeding. They're not going to stop.
Okay. So you prefer to go the nymphing route rather than a streamer or attractor pattern then?
I do, yes.
Steelhead, okay.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then Sonny's also, part of his question was asking about sinking tip. Again, 250 grain, is that good enough for the steelhead?
Sure, absolutely.
Well? Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay, same as with the browns, basically, right?
Yes.
We're just basically talking the same water. It's just what you're going after here.
Yeah, it just depends. If he's doing the 250 grain, he's probably thinking about swinging flies, and that does produce some violent strikes, and it is a good way to fish, just swinging flies. It tends to be a little bit slower than nymphing, but it's kind of an exciting way to catch the steelhead when they almost rip the rod right out of your hand.
Yeah, going back to a question I started before, Donald French in Indianapolis. He says, I fished the PM for many years for steelhead. What are the most productive patterns, time of day, and location? So you just talked about productive patterns. So why don't you talk about time of day and location? And he puts down deep holes, overhanging tree line, cut clay banks or ripples.
Yeah, it all depends on water temperature. Is going to dictate the activity. I mean, the lower the water temperature, the slower the fish are going to be. So they're going to typically be in the deeper holes, just kind of conserving energy, you know, waiting for an easy meal to come by. So, you know, like the stonefly, as I stated before, they're always hatching in the spring. Stones, the giant stones, we get the giant golden stones here, the prince nymph, and eggs are always rolling down the bottom. So in those low water conditions, they're sitting right on the bottom, so fishing an egg is a pretty good option. Once they start getting a little more active, they'll start, you know, kind of moving around, getting closer to the gravel, hitting the pockets and seams, and really it's basically the same flies there, but you can suspend them a little bit more. You don't have to really get them as close to the bottom during the cold water conditions.
Okay.
Really, stone flies are very, very common and popular pattern in this river during the springtime because they're hatching. They're all over in that river system.
So you fish a steelhead as you would basically a rainbow, looking for the same types of water and so forth that a rainbow would hold in, a steelhead would probably be holding in as well, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. Typically, yes. And, you know, steelhead are typically a little bigger, so maybe a little more water, but
yeah,
the same type of water, you know, the seams and the deeper holes and the little pockets, you know, in between the gravel, they'll be sitting in there. So.
Okay, but as opposed to, again, you know, the West Coast migratory kind of
right.
behaviors of where they're more staging, resting, then moving and staging and resting, and
mm-hmm.
we're not seeing typically that kind of behavior as much here.
Not as much,
right?
No.
Okay. Are there any other special kinds of techniques, you know, presentation or otherwise, that, you know, you guys use up there for the steelhead that we might not be seeing somewhere else?
Not that you haven't seen anywhere else, other than it depends on what type of fishing you're talking. And these questions are pretty much geared towards fly fishing. We do what's called back plugging, which are hardware trips, but
yeah,
it doesn't really pertain to any of this. But
well, what do you rig up, tandem rigs?
Yes.
Or
yeah,
what,
I always
would you
run.
Typically, how would you rig that up? What would you have on?
Well, I would have, you know, if I'm using an indicator, set up my leader, kind of drop it down, run the indicator, do a loop, and put on a tag end where I put my shot. Do another, put on a piece of tippet, put my first fly on, which would either be, usually it'll be an egg because it's closer to the shot, which means it'll be closer to the bottom of the stream. And then I'll run tie-on tippet right to the shank of the hook and run another 18 to 24 inches and tie on another fly. And just try and get it as close to the bottom, you know, just kind of tick it across the bottom without trying to hang it up and put it right in the strike zone.
So what would typically that other fly be? Would it be the prince nymph or
the prince nymph,
stonefly?
If they're really, if you're seeing a lot of eggs or active steelhead in the river, I will tie on two eggs. One will be a glow bug, which is just a regular, you know, straight round egg, and the next one would probably be what's called a nuke egg. It has a veil around the core, which imitates it still in the egg sac.
Okay. Okay, let's talk about time we have left here. Let's talk about salmon.
Okay.
We talked about how far they ran up, so we covered that
mm-hmm.
question. Time of year, again, you had mentioned that. What, again, thinking about people that might be coming from out of town, what's their safest bet to get into the salmon?
Typically the season, the peak of the run is mid-September through mid-October, that four-week period.
Okay.
And, again, it's all depending on the weather. Last year we had fish pretty heavy in the river this time of year, but we also, you know, last year we had a lot of rain and cooler temps, so that tells you how much weather plays a role in migratory fish. But typically, you know, like I said, mid-September, September 15th to October 15th, you can really get into a lot of good fish and, you know, hook anywhere from 40 to 50 a day.
Wow.
I think 25. Yeah, it's A lot of guys come back with some sore arms.
Now, these are all Chinooks, right? Or are there other types?
They're Chinooks, but we do have cohos that come up into the river.
Oh, nice.
A little bit later in the after the salmon, the king salmon do, or Chinooks, we do have cohos that come up in here and spawn also.
And their season is more into October then?
Yeah, you know, around that mid-October range, second week of October through the third week is when we tend to see more coho. I've seen them all the way into deer season, which is November. In November, we've seen even the kings, but more cohos than kings. They tend to run a little bit later.
Okay, okay. And then rod, reel, line weight for the salmon?
Well, for the salmon, I recommend nothing less than a 9 weight. A 9-foot 9 weight, 10-foot 9, or anything above that. These fish are typically bigger, they're meaner, they're stronger, and they're just brutes. Brute strength.
What are we talking about, the average fish and what's a large size fish?
Well, the last year our average fish was anywhere from 15 to 17 pounds. And they would run up to, you know, they can get as big as 35.
Yeah.
They're not quite the Alaska fish, but I'll tell you what.
That's a good size fish.
If you catch a 30-pound salmon, you're doing really well in this river just because of the distance, you know, the lack of fighting area that you have. These fish will take you into a log jam in approximately 2.7 seconds.
So all the more reason to have a rod with a good backbone.
Yes.
You
want something
that fish
out, or you can crank the drag down and try and turn them out of that log jam.
Must be a lot of log jams on that river.
There is.
You keep talking about them.
Yeah, it's one of those rivers that you're standing in one area and 50 yards either up or down, there's a log jam. So you got to stop these giant brutes. And if you don't, they're going to run you right into that log jam, wrap you around, and tink, they're gone.
Now, are these log jams natural, or are they still doing, are they remnants from actual logging still going on?
Remnants from logging, and then, you know, from the high water, they get pushed around quite a bit. Most of them are natural,
okay,
from trees, just falling into the river and the natural erosion of the banks. And it just creates log jams. Most of them are natural.
Now, what about flies for the salmon?
Favorite flies for the salmon, actually the bigger stone flies. You know, there's an old saying, the best fly for a salmon is the sharpest hook in the box. The reason behind that, I believe, is because they don't feed. They're not a feeding fish in the river.
Yeah.
They got one thing on their mind, and that's to procreate and then die. That's it. But you can get a natural and aggressive strike from these salmon. Real common ones are, you know, like they said, the green skunk butt, bigger eggs, and go with the bigger egg, popsicles, tequila sunrise. Sometimes the big flashy flies to get their attention tends to be the better of the more subtle nymphs that are floating around. They're not really feeding on the nymphs. Some guys get them on streamers, swinging big streamers that imitate alewives. So like a white or silver or something big and flashy, something to get their attention.
And so how are you fishing these flies?
The number one way to fish them is what's called the chuck and duck method. It's just a straight heavy monofilament or a shooting running line. You're tying on straight mono, some split shot, and then two, you're running a tandem rig off of that. And you're just, you know, swinging the rod behind you, ducking and chucking it out there and bouncing it across the bottom. You want to get that every foot, get about 3 ticks with your shot. I'll let you know that you're as close to the bottom as possible. It's a really easy method to learn. I always tell everybody, all the clients, that if you want to get your kids or somebody new introduced into fly fishing, bring them in the salmon season. It's a really good way to introduce them into it. It's an easy method to teach them how to use, to get a fly rod in their hand. And it's also exciting to see those big fish in the river and to hook them. And when they do land them, the smiles that produces on their faces is worth 1,000 words.
Yeah, yeah. Now, do you have the equivalent of a Grand Slam up there? Is it possible to get a salmon, steelhead, and brown a day?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
You always have that chance, sure. I mean, and the best time is in the fall. You know, you've got the salmon coming up. The rainbows and the browns are gorging on the eggs behind the salmon. Steelhead are kind of wandering up looking for the eggs also. And then you got you got cohos coming up. And you also have Lake Run browns that come out of Lake Mission to come up and spawn in the river. So actually you got six different species.
Wow.
In the river at one time that you could catch.
Because the steelhead are the ones that are coming up to winter in the river, right?
Correct, in the fall.
Yeah. So we've got Lake Run browns, rainbows, resident browns, steelhead, chinook, and cohos. Fly fisherman's dream. So.
Absolutely.
It's
paradise.
Yeah. Well, we ran out of time, but I think we covered the bases rather well there and given out a few tips. So,
great.
Stick with us here a few minutes longer, and we're going to give away some gifts tonight. 1-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, the 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine, and we'll also be giving away a $20 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. So, stay tuned. A mining company called Pac Rim Coal is planning a massive strip mine near Anchorage, Alaska. The Chuitna Coal Project would be the first project in Alaska history to mine directly through salmon habitat, the Chuitna River drainage, 11 miles of it. Critical commercial, sport, and subsistence fishing economies would be permanently destroyed. Pac Rim says it can rebuild the salmon stream, but scientific experts can find no example where successful restoration has occurred after strip mining. Chuitna coal would be shipped to Asia, leaving Alaska with nothing but devastated habitat and ruined salmon run. It's time to stop the Chuitna coal strip mine. And for more information about how you can help get involved, go to www.inletkeeper.org, that's inletkeeper.org, or www.trustees.org, and you can find out more information there. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave our website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find the link on our homepage, the section on tonight's show that says, what did you think of this show? Just click on the link, leave your comments. Now it's time to give away our prizes. And the winners of the drawing are randomly selected from the show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's a little too late, but make sure you do so on the next show, and you don't want to miss out on a lot of these great gifts we have to give away. So if you are the lucky winner tonight, we will contact you after the show to provide you with information on how to receive your gift. So first, we'll be giving away a 1-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, and a great gift to receive. If you already have a membership, we'll get it extended for you. And if you want to learn more about the Federation, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org. So, our winner there is Aaron Demo in Colorado. Aaron Demo. So, congratulations, Aaron. And I know you'll enjoy your membership to the Federation. Okay, now we'll give away that 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. Again, a wonderful gift to have. It's a magazine out of Calgary, Canada. If you want to learn more about Fly Fusion magazine, go to flyfusionmag.com, flyfusionmag.com. And we have a winner from Florida, and it's Jim Cameron. Jim Cameron. So congratulations, Jim, that 1-year membership to Fly Fusion magazine. And I know you'll enjoy that, too. Wonderful magazine. Lots of color, lots of how-tos in it. Great magazine to have. Okay, now, let's see here. We need to ask a question. Win that $20 gift certificate. And let me clear my queue here. A few more questions coming in. Sorry, folks, we didn't get to all the questions, but that's the way it is. We try to do our best. And let's see here. Josh, I'm trying to get all that. Okay, good. Now we've got it cleared. Okay, so the question is, this is going to favor the good typist. Give me a list of the 6 species of fish you can get in Pere Marquette River that we just talked about as far as sports fish go. And if you did the ultimate grand slam, you would catch these 6 fish. So, we're waiting now, Josh, to see how fast they can type. That's a pretty easy question. Like I said, it's going to favor the quick typist.
Cool.
See who was paying attention during the $20 gift certificate. So.
Yeah, because that was towards the end of the show when we covered
it. Oh, yeah, they should remember that. Of course, it doesn't look like anybody's remembered it here. Oh, here we go. Okay, the first one says, now you got to tell me if this is right. Josh. So we've got Steelhead, Resident Browns, Lake Run Browns, Chinook, Brook, and Coho. One of those is wrong, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. Close. Very close.
Yeah.
Let's see if we get another one. Okay, here's another one. Browns, Coho, Chinooks, Salmon, Brooks, and Rainbows. Again, not quite there, is it?
No.
No, because we got, well, Salmon is what Coho and Chinooks are.
Right.
Let's try again. Okay, here's another one. Coho, Chinook, Resident Lake Run Browns, Resident and Lake Run Browns, Rainbows, and Steelhead.
Bingo.
Bingo.
So we got Eric, a winner.
Got a winner, Eric, Lebanon, Pennsylvania. You just got yourself a $20 gift certificate. So that
wonderful.
One I wasn't as easy as I thought it might be. So
no.
And but that's the answer.
That's
Eric,
a lot of species there.
A lot of trophies. A lot of
absolutely.
Well, good. Eric, you won that $20 gift certificate. Please send me your contact information the same way you just sent it, or send it to info@askaboutflyfishing.com. What I'll need is your name again, your address, and your email address so that we can get that certificate to you. So, congratulations. Well, Josh, hey, thanks for being on the show tonight. I appreciate you taking time out. I know it is a busy season out there for you guys. So,
thank you for the opportunity, Roger. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it was lots of fun, and sounds like a great place to come fishing. So, hopefully you'll get some of us over there one of these days.
I hope so.
Okay. Our next broadcast will be on September 15th at 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern. And on that show, we're going to interview Kent Kleewine. And our topic for the show will be fly fishing for trophy trout in Georgia's Toccoa River. So Kent is well known in Georgia for being the top guide for putting clients on trophy, rainbow, and brown trout on the Toccoa River and its tributaries. Learn how to hook up with these trophies Southern style on our next show. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Flat River Fly Shop, Women's Fly Fishing in Alaska for sponsoring our show tonight. And if you think your company might benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. That's 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you then. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.